Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. Render therefore unto Caesar the things which be Caesar's, and unto God the things which be God's. That's Luke 20:25. What does that mean? Render what to whom? What belongs to Caesar and what belongs to God? This question and that text is at the very root of religious liberty. We need to be faithful stewards to whatever rule is placed over us to a point. And where is that point? Let's talk with Lincoln Steed today, editor of Liberty Magazine, about Caesar and just how rendering we need to be. Lincoln, give us some guidance here.
Well, we could pick this up at any number of points. And of course, the quote from Jesus is really our marching orders. Yes. He was quite plain. There were things that we owed to God as our creator and our moral ruler, and things that we owed just as a matter of, well, not convenience, but as a matter of law and order to those authorities that manage day-to-day affairs. The Bible and God never advises lawlessness and murder and mayhem, even in a sinful world, which has largely removed itself from God's direct control. Yes. It still is to be orderly. But a Christian, and indeed everyone, anybody that answers to the call to a creator God, has to recognize that the God that created the entire universe, that created us, that keeps the stars in their courses, as it says, that's where our primary loyalty must lie. But the Apostle Paul in the New Testament was quite plain that as a follower of God, recognizing this higher allegiance, that should mean for any government that's ruling in a moral way that we are an exemplary citizen.
And we have to assume, by other words that Christ said and that God said throughout the Testaments, that sometimes those in rule are placed there by God himself. I mean, we have to understand that there may be the hand of God behind what we don't recognize as our political leaders. Am I right there?
Sometimes, as a matter of routine, as someone once pointed out, talking about the human affairs, we're dealing with cause and effect. Mm-hmm. John Milton in Paradise Lost, he says we should reason from that first cause, mm-hmm. our parents' first disobedience. Mm-hmm. And then he explained the effect, being thrown out of Eden, sin and destruction and murder and all the rest followed in the world from that first cause. Mm-hmm. It's sometimes been said in a secular sense, we get the rulers we deserve. and so rulers come up from the body of citizenry. But I do think on occasion, for purposes that really beyond us, by and large, God perhaps, he said he has maneuvered things to put certain rulers there. Yeah. But, I hardly think that God wanted Hitler to be in control. And did he want George Bush? I don't know. Did he want President Obama? There are factions that would, yeah, in churches that would challenge both of those. Yeah. But this matter of church and state, of course, is at the very root of understanding religious freedom. I was sparked on some of this recently at one of our Liberty Board meetings, where we have a number of people within our organization that have some connection with the types of things we're doing. So they meet regularly to go over the upcoming issues. And they were looking at the copy for our next issue. And there was a letter to the editor there. I'm surprised that they were reading them. So on one level, I should have thought this was good. But there's a very short letter from someone, two or three sentences, and they raised a question about the American flag being behind the lectern or the altar in a church. Hmm. Was this right? And they decided separation of church and state, God's kingdom and the kingdom of man. And I have strong opinions on this, but I put a little editorial note underneath and I just said, it's probably not the best. Mm-hmm. I thought I was being non-dogmatic. And one of our members said, this should be taken out. This should be taken out because we could be signaling disloyalty toward the state. Hmm. Well, that sort of triggered my response, and I ended up giving a long riff, which a number of them disagreed with, curiously, and the more they disagreed, I got heavier into the topic, because I think that there is a serious issue at play, and I've been quite convinced for decades that people are generally tone deaf on this. It's a matter of sovereignty. You go back to the Old Testament, And, of course, they were a theocracy in for much of the Old Testament, starting in the book of Exodus. But God laid out a principle very clearly there that the kings were not to be involved in religious matters. And remember, King Saul, the first king, the prophet told him his kingdom was going to be taken away from him because he presumed to take on the roles of the high priest and give a sacrifice. But more specific than that, the temple was clearly seen as God's territory. In fact, in the wilderness, the very glory of God dwelt behind the curtains, and no one could see that, or else they'd be killed on the spot by God's glory, not by anyone else. But more than that, it was laid out in the Old Testament that while there was God's power and prerogatives in the temple, there were civil affairs. But if somebody who was accused of murder or some capital crime could make their way into the temple, not into the holy place where God's presence, unapproachable presence was, but in the outer court, they could grab hold of the altar there and they would be immune from civil penalty. And that principle continued through most of recorded history. In medieval Europe, for example, you could obtain literal refuge in a church. Of course, at that time in Europe, it was mostly the Roman Catholic Church. But, you know, the knights and the armies of the king might want to kill you, and if you stuck your head out the door, would do so. But only on extreme moments did they ever dare do so, and then the penalty was severe. Remember, Henry II incited some knights to kill Thomas à Becket, the Archbishop of Canterbury, inside the temple, and he was forced to be whipped and endure penance. Now, I don't think he cared for that, but if he hadn't have done that, he'd have lost the loyalty of his constituency, because he had allowed or he had broken a very clear principle of God's kingdom and of the civil kingdom. And today, we still have that underlying view, even though very few people think about it. I can remember back in, I think it was the 70s in the United States, many church groups were concerned about the plight of refugees. Unlike today, they're not that concerned for the Mexican immigrants that want to do all sorts of horrible things, including ejecting them over the border. But the Cambodian refugees in particular, many of whom had made their way illegally or temporarily and then overstayed in the U.S., and the government was trying to eject them. There was what was called the sanctuary movement, where they would literally sleep and live inside a church, and the state did not touch them. Now, the state wanted to and kept saying it had the power to, but they didn't dare go into a church because of the implications of that act. So it stayed with us. And it's impressed me, even in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, when we build a church structure, it's intended to be a church. But once it's actually built, then you have a ceremony where you dedicate that to be a church. And once that kicks in, that is God's territory. And of course, the state essentially understands that. That's why it's there is tax exemption. And even with the recent Hosanna Tabor Supreme Court decision, they've reaffirmed that churches are exempt from all sorts of laws, even laws of mistreatment in the workplace on race and disability and so on. It's not that they want the church to be unfair, but the hazard is so great if the state comes in and tries to sort that out that they will become entangled with church affairs that they are not allowed there. So you know, we need to keep in mind that the principle is ancient, but it's not archaic, and that it stays with us because the claims of God stay with us, and the symbols that we're working with are as real as they ever were before. And one area where I think this plays out negatively, most people are blithely unaware of it, is the flags that often are placed not just within a Christian church, but very often behind the speaker's podium, which is called the altar. Where, you know, they often say that the speaker will speak from the throne of grace.
There's an American flag up there.
Right. Well, there's nothing wrong with the flag. And this is where some of my interlocutors at the board thought that I was demeaning America. It's not at all. It's just inappropriate there. And they even went so far as to make a statement that set my teeth on edge. They said, we put the flag there to honor this Christian country.
Oh,
what
it's
done.
Yes.
Well,
I can see why that got your attention. Yes.
That's not right. It's not right in my view. And even an understanding of flags should make things plainer. You know, back in the Roman days, they didn't have flags. I think it's probably a byproduct of the industrial era where weaving of a fine nature was possible. But in those early history days in the Roman Empire, what they had was the Roman eagle, the standard mm-hmm. of the legion. And the standard went before, it was planted in the ground when they camped, and that was Roman territory where they were. And as time went on and flags became like we see them today, you know, Christopher Columbus traveled to the New World, and I've seen those paintings portray what he did. He poked that flag in the sand and claimed it for his for Spain. I know in Australia, when Captain Cook and other adventurers first came there representing the British Empire, they planted the flag and claimed it. In battle, soldiers carry the flag, and if the soldier carrying it is killed, another one will pick it up. If the enemy claim it, they will fight bitterly to get it back. And when they gain the hill that the hundreds of soldiers perhaps have died in gaining, they plant the flag. It is a symbol of ownership, of authority, of the state.
And, of course, what happened up there on the moon when we arrived there? The
Absolutely.
First thing we did was plant the flag.
The iconic picture, I think there's a statue down Washington of Iwo Jima.
Yes, yes.
That curiously was a restaged picture. I mean, it happened, but it was restaged for the photograph. Yeah. But several soldiers were pushing that flag up on the summit of Iwo Jima there on part of the push toward the mainland of Japan. It's inspiring. And people know what that means. That's planting our authority. So how Christians could be so, not so much unaware, but unconcerned that a pure symbol of state authority could be planted in the very place where you define God's authority and presence is beyond me.
Oh, Lincoln, you're getting me all concerned now because I used to teach church school, and right behind my little desk there in our little church school was the American flag. And I have pictures of me sitting there as a Christian church school teacher with my students, and right there hovering over me was the American flag. This is God's church. This is God's church school.
Well, I do think that the argument can be extended there, but where it's at its most crucial is in the presence of God in the sanctuary where you're invoking him, and it's literally his land, and then a counter standard is planted.
And you really have to reiterate right at this point that you're not anti-flag or anti-American. You're talking about
Absolutely
something
not.
Else here. Yes.
No.
Clarify that.
Certainly not. I mean, it's just that it's not appropriate there. Mm-hmm. It's no judgment whatsoever on the state.
Yes.
We can make judgments whether the American state is more godly and supportive of the values of heaven than, say, a Middle Eastern dictatorship. You know, those are valid judgments. But all civil powers are really the other compared to God in the spiritual realm. You just don't need to put it into the same discussion. It's not to demean the state at all. And the state... As Jesus says, you know, render unto Caesar. Caesar has never been backward about promoting his ensign and his prerogative. So we shouldn't feel too jealous for the right of the state to proclaim its power. I mean, it does it by armies, by police, by indoctrination in the schools. No, this is a matter of appropriateness. And you know, I don't think the world comes to an end in a church that has the flag behind there, but it's a blithe forgetfulness of the really very principle at play. And now and then, it will bite people. Where it bit the Christian churches in Germany was as the Nazis came to power. We ran in Liberty magazine a picture of the Catholic and the Lutheran leaders shaking Hitler's hand mm-hmm. and in the context that they'd made statements that it was a Christian's duty to support the Führer. Mm. And then in those churches, practically all the churches that survived, they had the flag of National Socialism behind the lectern, and it even came to the point that they had the swastika on the wall behind the altar. Yeah. And they didn't get into that just at once. They got into it by the logic of thinking, well, this is a country that's supporting our Christian values. Because Hitler himself said, curiously enough, that National Socialism supports Christianity. To support socialism is to support Christianity.
Mm. My.
And, you know, I'm not for a moment suggesting that we even live in anything like that construct, but there's an extreme example.
Yeah.
I think we need to beware of it. And let's just say at some point the United States, since it's not a democracy, it's a representative government, and it might respond to a pressure from a certain faction of its citizenry to act in an inappropriate way toward people of faith. Do we then keep the flag up there? Or I think most people would see suddenly, those same people that said we're honoring a Christian country.
Yes.
But now we're openly endorsing bad behavior. So better not allow yourself to make the judgment on whether or not it's an appropriately Christian country to put the flag there. It's just always inappropriate. Mm. Then you don't have to throw your lot in with or take away your lot from the state, because the Christian is called to be an exemplary citizen unless and until the state asks something that God has asked.
George H.W. Bush told a gathering of evangelicals in Chicago, "It's no accident that in drafting our Bill of Rights, the founders dedicated the first portion of our First Amendment to religious liberty. I believe the Establishment Clause has been a great boon to our country's religious life. One reason religion flourishes in America is that worship can never be controlled by the state." A message from your friends at libertymagazine.org. We're talking with Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine. Lincoln, have you ever preached this in a church with a flag hanging behind you? Have you ever done this?
Yes, and this is what got me into trouble with our board.
Oh, man. What happened?
Well, I was in Australia, and I was preaching at a large church in Victoria, the southern state, actually the largest church in that conference. And the pastor was there that day. They're normally not when I'm visiting, but he was there because the speaker of the legislative body for the state was there to present a flag to the Pathfinders, the youth group,
mm-hmm.
which was fine. I spoke to him in the side room, and he was a nice guy, but he knew nothing about the church, didn't have spiritual sensibilities at all.
Mm-hmm.
So no one had filled him in much, or not at all. And so we stand up front, and he was in the front of our group on the stage behind the rostrum or the altar, and the Pathfinders marched in with the Australian flag. He made a statement, and then they marched right past us and planted it behind us.
Oh, boy.
And by then, my hackles were rising
my.
A bit.
Oh,
but
my.
The clincher was when the pastor, after fawning over this politician big time in public, then he prayed, and he said to God, he said that we are first of all citizens of this country.
Oh.
So I changed my sermon on the spot.
I guess you did.
And preached about how the highest aspiration of a human being is to honor God and to serve Him, and that we are citizens of His kingdom, and that some people follow different courses, going into politics or whatever, but to be a saint in God's eyes is the key thing. And I said, in this church, I said, we're all just human beings, but the saints have a special, those are the ones that God shows His favor to in this church, not that He's against anyone. So after the sermon, the pastor and I had quite some words.
Oh, my. Oh.
And then they said in the board meeting, they said, well, I guess you never went back there again. Well, actually, I did, but we made up later. But I have a strong opinion on it.
Yes.
And I pointed out to our group, which is not generally known in the U.S., that in most other countries, they see it more than we do.
Mm.
It's a very American thing to mix the symbols of the state and church structure.
That's because we come down to this core belief that we are a Christian nation. And
absolutely. And it's erroneous.
Yes,
one.
Yes.
We have been a Christian society,
mm-hmm.
but it was never intended to be a Christian government. But it's what is often called American exceptionalism.
Mm-hmm.
And as George Bush said, you know, God has blessed this country and He couldn't have blessed more deserving people. So you basically sanctified the governance and the people as sort of a latter-day Israel. As a theocracy,
mm-hmm.
but we are not a theocracy. But it doesn't demean the state whatsoever to put it in its appropriate place. I don't think it's absolutely wrong to have a flag elsewhere on the property. But in the church proper, in what we say, there's a throne of grace and God's sanctuary. There, I think, to mix the symbols is dangerous. I mean, I have to hope that God winks at these times of ignorance, but it shows a very, very shallow view of the sanctity of God and his ways and of the relative importance of civil and religious matters.
Now, there are probably pastors or church members listening to the program right now, Lincoln, where would you put the flag? Let's just be practical here. You take it away from the throne of grace, you take it and put it where?
I wouldn't be inclined to have it on a church property.
Okay, all right.
But if they were going to put it, it would be a lot better perhaps in the foyer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it's bad behind the altar there. And what does someone think when they come in? They think exactly what it's meant to, that this is property of America or England or wherever it is. But, you know, we're talking about this country. It's created an identification with the country, not with God, not with the holy things. And it would divert attention from the true point of worship there, the true power at play within a church.
This is so subtle. These are the subtle things we talk about on this program that so amazes me, Lincoln Steed, the subtle ways that we are really not seeing as we should see on this thing, the subtle things that we do and the subtle things that we say and the way we demonstrate a not complete understanding that there needs to be a separation here. And I'm appreciating
Absolutely.
What you're saying here. I'm really appreciating this.
You know, someone can say, well, it's just a symbol, but symbols are very important.
Yes.
I mean, I tried to explain that as far as the state's concerned, the symbol is seriously important. Mm-hmm. The Supreme Court did say you're allowed to burn a flag, but the average citizen doesn't accept that. People have been roughed up and wars have been begun basically because someone dares to burn an American flag. Mm-hmm. They see that as a total act of desecration because it's the symbol of the power and the reality of the state.
I know as a traveler, you have often been in situations where you're very happy to see that American flag flying above a building.
Course.
And, oh, my. And
I mean, I've lived so long in the U.S. that it gives me a warm glow.
It does, absolutely. And I've traveled, and I've been places, and I've been in tight situations. And when I saw that flag, I was very glad to see it because I thought, okay, now I'm coming back home again. Now I'm coming to a place where I will be understood. And we need to start having that kind of feeling when we walk into the door, the back door of our church, and we see the Christian flag up there. Now I'm
Absolutely.
Home. Now I'm at a place where I'll be understood. Now I'm where I am going to be loved by a God that loves me. We need to have that kind of feeling toward our Christian flag as we have toward the American flag. But we need
Wonderful
to have them
summary.
Separate. Yeah, we need to have them separate, though.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I don't think this, if anybody that listens to this with an open mind, I can't see how they would be alienated or troubled by it, because it's not to demean the state.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually, as we really came to the end, it's to recognize in its fullness what a flag means. It's not something to be trifled with.
Yes, yes.
It is a wonderful, powerful symbol of the civil society that we live in.
But put it in its place.
Right. It's not appropriate in the presence of the all-consuming, omnipresent God who created all of us. We should be humble in that presence, and even the nation should bow before him. But we're not demeaning any flag, and this one is the United States one. But when I go to Australia, where I grew up, same thing. I have great respect for that. So in a way, we I think, hazard both the symbols, the symbol of God and the symbol of the state, when we mix them like that.
Yes.
And I very seldom is it done consciously anymore, but that doesn't make it right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And yes, some people can say, just a symbol, big deal, you know. But in some way, there's
deal.
A circular
it's
element. A symbols affect our actual thinking
absolutely.
On the real level.
Yeah.
And in this case, I think it denatures us as to see the high and holy and separate element of God and the place of worship with the Ancient of Days.
So if you want to raise that beautiful American, Australian, whatever country you are, flag in your front yard, if you want to put it in your living room, in your bedroom, if you want to put a sticker on your car, that is all fine and good. That's the place it belongs. But you're saying not in the sanctuary of a Christian church.
No,
okay.
Not at all.
All right.
Well, interesting discussion. Thank you. I always enjoy this. You sparked me to elaborate even more than I would normally. But I hope our listeners see this. And if they don't, they're free to contact us at libertymagazine.org. We have a feedback spot there where you can email me and add to my day by many, many more emails. But we like to hear from people.
Yes. And think about this, listener. When you go to the website, when you leave your information there and you have your comments, think about what you're about to say. Let's don't do any knee jerks here. Let's think about this thing. Do we have a territory that is set apart for God? Do we have a territory that is set apart for America? When those two territories come together, which one wins? Which one is the one we need to really go to first? That is the rendering point. That is the focal point. That is the leverage point where we have to decide what flag we are sitting under, we are praising under, we are singing under, we are praying under, we are studying under, we are living under. Am I on the right track here, Lincoln?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Good summation again.
All right. Once again, that website, www.libertymagazine.org. And also, at that site, you can subscribe to the magazine. Now, tell us about how people can subscribe to the magazine and how they can subscribe for other people in their community.
Well, on the website, it should lead you through it, but I think it's $6.97 is the price that we have on the website for 1 year, which is hardly more than a decent milkshake, and you can get six.
About the
issues.
Price of an indecent milkshake, actually.
Yes, yeah, the decadent, decadent chocolate or whatever.
There you go.
But it's not very much money, even in a time of tight funds. And you should read it. But more importantly, or maybe as importantly, you can send it to other people. Mm-hmm. If we have that amount of money, we guarantee you we have hundreds of thousands of names of thought leaders, lawyers, and so on, that we would like to send it to, and you could enable that to one of these recipients. So go to our website, and it'll lead you through the process. But we only exist on either donations or direct paid subscriptions. There's no other source of funding.
All right.
And we send out 200,000, almost 200,000 every issue.
And I just love the covers of these things, the color covers and the artwork. It's just pretty fantastic. And I just invite you. What it does, Lincoln, when I get it in the mailbox and I leaf through it as I'm walking back to the house, it reminds me that there is a situation in this world, in this country, and in our community that we need to be on guard of. There is a situation where we need to be just diligent, because some of the subtle things and some of the not-so-subtle things can happen in our lives that can make a huge difference in the way our government, our community, and our homes view God and view the government and where they come together and where they do not. Good stuff. www.libertymagazine.org. Lincoln Steed, thank you very much for giving us this words of wisdom.
My pleasure as always.
And listener, until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. You've been listening to Life Quest Liberty. To further explore the issues discussed on today's program, visit www.libertymagazine.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of religious freedom burning in your heart today.